Welcome back to the Blues on Parade podcast, where all we do is talk Chelsea and talk shit about everyone else. Great weekend to be a Chelsea fan. Moving on to the FA Cup, 4-0 win against Preston. Arsenal losing, getting knocked out. That's just another competition where they will not see any silverware. It's looking good. We're on the come up. They're falling off. I love it. I'm joined here today with my buddy Andreas. Andreas, how are you feeling after our third straight victory in a row?
It feels like we've won a lot more in a row. I don't know why. We're on a good run of form. It feels great.
Forget the Wolves match. If we disregard the Wolves match, it's 5 wins in a row.
Yeah, you're not supposed to play on Christmas Eve. That's not allowed for a reason. But
that was Christmas Eve, but yeah. That's even worse.
Anywho, the point is that ever since Mourinho went to the Joe Obi Mikel podcast and said that Arsenal was going to choke, all they've done is lose, and it is fantastic. They were in first place when he said that they weren't going to win the league, and they are now in fourth place and out of the FA Cup. And they're also out of the Carabao Cup, so it's beautiful. It's great times.
Yeah. And we all know they're not winning Champions League. They're definitely not winning Champions League. So their only hope is the Premier League, and we all know how that's going to turn out.
Kevin De Bruyne is back, so yeah.
It's a wrap. And Liverpool looking really good too. So, you know, I'm happy that it's going to be a very interesting title battle this season. As much as it sucks that Chelsea's not anywhere close to this fight, it's still going to be exciting. Anyway, back to Chelsea. 4-0 win against Preston. We played in a 4-2-3-1. Petrovic in goal. Alfie Gilchrist starting at right back, which is kind of a shock, but very exciting. De Saussy and Colwell in the middle, and Demalo Gusto on the left. Then we had Caicedo and Enzo kind of as the double pivot. Then we had a front four, I'll say, with Sterling on the right, Palmer in the middle, Mudryk on the left, and Broja as striker. It was definitely one of those tales of two halves kind of matches, because we came out flat. First half was very worrying, especially considering the side we were playing against. And I think Chelsea fans had a lot of PTSD and were very worried about, what's going to happen here? Second half, are we not going to turn around? Blah, blah, blah. Second half, after Broja scored in the 58th minute, just opened up the floodgates. Ended up scoring 3 more. The goals, I would say they weren't, they were quality goals, but, you know, 2 offset pieces. One was a corner. One was a cross and a header. And then Enzo's was kind of like a broken play that he put in. So, you know, 4 goals is still 4 goals. I'm obviously very happy with the result, but, I don't know. I mean, Andreas, what did you think? I mean, let's start off with, I think, the switch to the 4-2-3-1 versus a 4-3-3. What kind of stood out to you in that?
I mean, I think Palmer, the big thing was like, oh, Palmer can't just be the 10. Like, we can't play 2 midfielders. But it felt comfortable, and it has felt comfortable now for a few weeks now. I think the one player that I thought got the most out of being back in the 4-2-3-1 was Enzo. I feel like in the 4-3-3, while Gallagher was kind of like the shining light in that, Enzo was sort of regressing. And today I feel like we got a bit of old Enzo back. The through balls from deep, the quick decisions from, you know, getting the ball from defense to the attack. And again, I'm being second half specific. The first half, I think everyone can agree, was pretty forgettable. But just his balls from like that are over the top, just right up where you want them to be, very Cesc Fabregas-esque. It was a nice like return to form from him. I felt like he was re-energized after a few weeks off. That was kind of the clear thing for me. I also thought that, you know, Malagusto has been really good still as sort of like the one attacking fullback. Just wish he was starting on the right side at all times, even though he did get the assist from the left side.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that the 4-2-3-1 is starting to kind of bring life again. And I know that we went away from it because we had no sort of tens and wingers available. But now with Sterling, Mudryk, Madueke, and even Palmer all sort of playing better, if Nkunku comes back too, we have sort of a good attacking rotation behind a striker to keep playing in this way.
Yeah. You got to be careful with the Fabregas comparisons, but I I know what you meant. Fabregas-esque close.
The passing style, not anything else style, outside of that.
Sure. But the Malagusto thing, I mean, I'm totally fine with him playing left back, like, when necessary. Like, obviously, I prefer it on the right back.
Yeah.
I mean, him as a right back, but just so happy to see Levi not playing there. And I know that, like, Alfie Gilchrist, he's naturally a center back, correct? Is that,
I mean,
he plays right back too, but I think, you know, what we're asking him to do as right back, he's basically playing kind of like a center back, but with Malagusto going up, like, the cutback is there. I mean, we saw that's how he got his assist. He did a cutback and he crossed it with his right foot. That option is still there. Like, it doesn't, you know, just play, the idea of him playing on the left by itself doesn't mean that he's going to be like completely eliminated as like a, you know, attacking threat. It's still there. So I'm not too worried about this. It doesn't give me like as much stress as I think playing Colwill out of position at left back, you know? And then, I don't know what the Enzo thing though. That he looked really good. I do agree with you that he looks better in like a double pivot. But I don't know. He still has yet to reach the levels that I think he can. He's kind of like in between. Like, he's not like a defensive stalwart enough to be playing like CDM. And his attacking prowess isn't all there to be like more of an attacking, like, you know, midfielder. So, you know, he's a little bit of a tweener, but I think that he's really starting to develop the passing a lot better. The balls over the top is awesome. I kind of want to spend a little bit of time talking about Raheem Sterling because in this first half, I was like, damn, two games in a row without Sterling, we balled out. We finally introduce him back into the starting lineup and we look like shit. Like, damn, maybe it is time to move on from Sterling. Like, he needs to move on to the bench. He ends up finishing with an amazing free kick goal and an assist too on the Enzo goal. I still think the frustrations are there with Sterling. Like, he still had a couple moments where he's dribbling in the box and, you know, looking for the contact rather than trying to make something happen. But I think I'm still of the opinion that our best 11 still includes him.
Like, yeah.
In our big, most important matches, I still think that he needs to be there. Like, he's by far our best dribbler. Like, I don't think anyone else comes close, to be honest. I mean, we'll see when Nkunku is fully healthy. Maybe he'll you know, give him a run for his money. But right now, Raheem Sterling's definitely our best dribbler, the best, you know, person to, you know, create something out of nothing. But yeah, what did you think from his performance?
I mean, yeah, the second half was much better. It's crazy. Like, you and I were talking about this probably for the better part of the last week off the podcast, how Sterling is just, you just have higher expectations of him just because of the price tag, the salary, the experience, and all these things. But his floor, like Raheem Sterling's worst game is still probably going to be better than Mudrik's worst game, or even Madueke's worst game, which is why, like you said, your best 11 probably still includes Sterling, even though like fans like myself would rather give those minutes to like Mudrik or Madueke because they have a potential long-term future here. But then you have moments like the free kick where he makes something happen out of nothing. And then what ended up being the Enzo goal was all like Sterling was 99% responsible for that, combining with Caicedo dribbling through tight spaces and then just not being able to get the shot off. It's just, again, I don't get how we can have a Sterling dominate Man City and then we can have a Sterling that goes asleep for 45 minutes against someone like Preston North End. And so I think that's where like a lot of fans seem to just be harping on Sterling. But if you look at the big picture, like even going back to when we were shitty in the back end of last season, like consistency wise, we're still getting consistent goals from Sterling, even though he has the bad misses or the dumb errors where he doesn't pass it sideways to Nico or Cole Palmer. So yeah, he's just frustrating because you would wish he would give you 7 out of 10s at a minimum every single week. But it's just like his bads are just, they're forgivable to the young players because they're young, but you just don't want to see that from Raheem Sterling. So yeah, I appreciated the return to form in the second half. I think he needed that going into yet another elimination game midweek. So it was interesting, like you said, that the first 45 minutes when we've gone from back-to-back matches looking good without him for it to be kind of wonky. But then the second half, all the goals come while Raheem Sterling played 90 minutes. So
yeah, you know we love a good scapegoat, and he's just an easy target. You know, it's the number one coping mechanism in human history, scapegoating. And as much as I love to point the finger at Raheem Sterling, the whole team looked bad in that first half.
Yeah.
So can't put it on him. All right, let's talk about Armando Broja again, kind of silencing a lot of the haters, I think, with this performance.
Second half performance also.
Yeah, I mean, again, let's just like put that caveat, like we don't need to mention first half versus second half for every player, because like I said, every player kind of looked poor in that first half. He looked a lot better then in the second half. But Broja, really great finish on the goal. Like that's it's been a while since we've had a real aerial threat who can score those chances in front, at least. I mean, I'm so used to the guys like Kai Havertz who are literally afraid of the ball. You know, Timo Werner's, the smaller guys that aren't really the threats. I mean, even like Tammy Abraham, like he was probably our last like big striker.
Giroud, yeah.
Yeah, and then Giroud. Oh, right. Giroud was the last guy. But I think, you know, he's got that in his bag. He almost had a second one shortly after the first. I think that was another header as well.
Yeah, yeah, hit the crossbar like 3 minutes later for Mudrik.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, that it's nice to see that that's there. I did see some people questioning his effort, like just like he wasn't running as much, but I don't know. I didn't see that. Did you see anything like that?
No, I think people just want to put players all in the same box. Like, yes, for the last few weeks, we've seen Nico Jackson be all over the place because Nico Jackson checks in and links up play in the middle of the field. Hell, he was playing left wing. So when you have a guy that's more of like your poacher or like your behind the line striker, like Broja, like it's going to look different. And yeah, I think, again, he needed that goal to sort of find himself in that second half. Like you said, right after he scored, he was starting to look a little bit more dangerous. I think he had like three or four shots at, by the end of the game. It's just, you need him to score right now because we just don't have anybody else. Like as of right now, he is who we have. And so for him to get that goal, I think more than anything gives him just confidence going into midweek because he was pulled early. And I don't think it's because he was poor. I think it's because we can't have a tired Broja on Tuesday. And Nkunku has some sort of hip thing now. And David Washington is not going to start a game out of the blue. So he got his goal. He got a little confident, almost scored a brace. Back-to-back headers, get him off the pitch, get him ready for next game. And hopefully he picks up where he left off. Like, Broja, be Broja. You don't have to be the tiki-taka spin flare, like flick it, Nico Jackson type between, you know, between the boxes. Just get yourself open in the box and hopefully your teammates start looking for you the way Gusto and Mudryk did. So, again, I think there's still a lot more I'd like to see from Broja, but he got a goal and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I think you're right. That I think that a lot of like we just need to view them as completely different players, in their play styles and what they can contribute. I liked what I saw, and I'm excited to see him start for as long as he has to. It's going to be a fun experiment to keep an eye on. All right, let's move on. Noni Madueke coming off the bench, but still continuing his top form. He had a lot of good chances, nearly scoring a couple times. I think he had like four shots also in you know half the time that Broja had. So he was a lot more direct. That was another fun performance, and I really have no idea what to make of these performances. Like, I don't know, like, how much more playing time he's going to get. I don't know how much, like, you know, these visions of what we see, like, how much he's going to grow into it in the future. But, yeah, I mean, I just want to take a second to talk about Noni and what he looked like.
I mean, More of the same, right? Like, we always knew Noni's going to be the most direct out of our wingers. Like, even Mudryk is more of a passer than Noni is. And in the past three matches, Noni just has a thirst for the goal. Like, he wants to do it himself. And I think the one thing that I've noticed is just, yes, he's direct. Yes, he wants to go alone. But it's not the Noni we saw in the spring where it's like he's going to carry it from midfield, try to beat three players and then do something. Like, I think he's gotten kind of a hang of what we want to do on the pitch a little bit more. And even Pochettino has said, like, that's why he's getting minutes, right? Like, he gets it. He gets what we're supposed to be doing now. He's put in the hard work. He understands his responsibilities. And he's getting the minutes. I mean, he's played now. This is what? He started last match. And
last two, right?
No. He came off the bench against Palace and scored the winner.
Okay.
And yeah. Then he earned the penalty kick and got the winner. Right. Started against Luton, scored there, and then 30-minute cameo here. You're asking about like where can he get minutes? I think again with Nkunku still being such a question mark, Palmer's the 10. Period. Like that is where Palmer will be in the next round of matches until Nkunku gets healthy. I think, again, Sterling probably gets the majority of the minutes, whether he's the right wing or the left wing. And it depends on sort of where Poch wants to go with the other pick. Is Mudryk playing well and like good enough to be starting over Madueke and playing on the left wing, or is Madueke now the informed guy and Sterling plays left wing while Madueke plays right wing?
And do you think the latter is true, that Madueke deserves to start over Mudryk right now?
Probably. As much as I love Mudryk, I think with a team like this, like after Madueke's been sort of outcasted for so long, and he's playing well, he's scoring, he's taking penalties from the captain and putting them away, like you have to reward these young players. Like you can't tell them like, oh, you did great, but you're not going to get the minutes. And if you're not going to give Noni if you're not going to get a overlapping fullback on the left side, because we don't have, you know, it's usually Colwill, then play the right winger that's going to cut inside and try to create something with Gusto overlapping him, right? Like if Madueke is scoring and Gusto's healthy enough now to keep starting, Sterling being on the back post making runs while the other two guys cause havoc from the right side, it just kind of makes sense. So yeah, it might just be Madueke getting the minutes Tuesday versus Mudryk, at least as of right now.
Yeah, it's tough. The one thing that I would say is that I think that Noni brings to the game what, like, similar things that Sterling brings. And I think that having Mudryk on the left and Sterling on the right adds more as far, like, just variety of skill sets and what they can provide.
Yeah.
But it's a tough decision. Like I know, I think right now I'm split as far as like which of the two deserves more play time, because
right,
I think Mudryk's looked good too. Like he's obviously had a goal here and there, and you know, I mean, just like his pace by itself is like such an insane weapon. But we'll see. It's really tricky. Like Poch really has like a difficult task ahead of him of trying to balancing out, like,
yeah,
you know, between, you know, looking forward, like if it were up to me, like I personally wouldn't start Sterling until like, you know, big games where we really need it. I just like want to, like, you know, the Chelsea fan in you wants to see like, let's focus on the future, let's focus on the young players. But at the same time, like we need to, like as manager, like you still need to, you know, win matches and have positive performances and results. So I don't know. It's tough.
I mean, we played twice in the next week, right? So likelihood is all three of those guys that we mentioned will start one of the two matches. Like you might have Madueke Sterling, Madueke Mudryk, or Mudryk Sterling as a combination. All three names should be in the starting lineup one match or the other. Does that make sense? Like, now I'm saying not all three at once, but like two of the three will start. There's a reason that the one thing that I find interesting, right, is you played Sterling 90 minutes with a game on Tuesday. Like, why was he the one that stayed on the pitch?
Right, instead of Mudryk.
I guess all three goals came after Mudryk came off in the 61st. So at that point, it's kind of like, not sure what to do.
Nah, I mean, that's not necessarily like the cause of it.
Yeah, no, right, right. I'm just saying, like, it's like hindsight, like, oh, you could have taken off Sterling to rest him and then the goals would have come. But the goals happened while Sterling was probably a key member of it all. So
the goals happened when Noni came in, too. You can say that. I don't know. Or right, Thiago Silva. Was it Thiago Silva?
He's Noni earned the corner that Thiago Silva scored.
Yeah. old butterfly effects going on right there. Okay. Yeah, I mean, as it was, you know, a win against a championship side, I don't know how much to draw, you know, just like pull out of this match. And, you know, as far as like how I think of certain players or about Poch or whatever, I don't know if there's anything much more that we need to discuss. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we get into transfer news?
Yeah, I mean, we still have yet to go into halftime losing under Poch, which is a crazy stat because we've just kind of, I mean, he's not been perfect in our eyes. We've had our complaints of his style and what he's done. And then the other thing I saw was somebody did like a 2023 recap of Chelsea and like what we looked like in the spring versus where we're at now. And Poch has like doubled the wins, halved the losses, and then increased our goal scoring by 20. Which, yes, we're still in 10th, which is what makes me like bringing all this positivity sort of in a weird spot. But we're one match from jumping to 7th place, two matches from potentially jumping into 6th and being in the Europa League conversation. It's just crazy. I don't know if we've now sort of gone past the hump of these young guys understanding the pace of the Premier League, and we can expect not much more in terms of like suddenly being top four, but like at least a little bit more consistency in the performances. And although we have our nitpicks and what we disagree with the manager and that sort of thing, in the big scheme of things, we are trending up as a club again, which I think is like not the worst thing to say going into a new year.
No, it's not. Not at all. It's well accepted. All right, let's talk a little bit about transfer news. Sad news for the Motsen Mafia. I was really disappointed in this, but, you know, business is business. Ian Motsen looks like it's very close, like it's inevitable it's going to happen. A loan move to Dortmund. Not sure yet if it's going to be an option to buy or an obligation to buy. I've heard both, so I'm hoping it's an option. But, you know, I just don't want to let go of him. I love him so much, but it makes sense. It's business. I think Dortmund would be a great fit for him. I'm excited for that, and I will continue to watch his career and see how he develops.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer that we're going to get to see him play his natural position elsewhere. It is what it is at the end of the day. Motsen, unless he had like Nate Robinson hops, was probably going to struggle in the long term in the Premier League. But you hate to see like your academy guys leave without, you know, ever getting the proper chance when the chance was there. I think that's just the big what if question. I don't think in the big picture I'm going to lose much sleep. Sorry, Sam. Like 5 years, 2 years down the road, I'm not going to be like, man, if we would have kept Ian Motsen. But at the same time,
never know. It's definitely possible.
Right. You're right. I agree. I'm just saying, as of right now, I'm like,
yeah,
it's just, it stinks that we had chances, multiple chances to play a left back and we never did. But again, business is business.
Yeah. I mean, there's always, whenever you do a deal like this, like there's just been so many players that Chelsea have let go without giving them a proper chance that have turned out to be amazing players. So it's just like every time we do this, like I remember people were freaking out about Lewis Hall. Like he had some decent performances for us, and he's like barely even playing, even at Newcastle, even with all the injuries, like he's still barely getting playing time. But, you know, it could be more of the same with Ian Motsen, but we'll see. Next bit of news, the Chalobah rumors to Bayern. You know, this was something big that it looked like it was about to happen in the summer. Things fell through. Leading into January, it sounded like it was still going to happen, and then all of a sudden, plans are off. Bayern's focus on Eric Dier. Interesting. I don't know what the hell Thomas Tuchel is thinking, but I mean, I guess maybe Harry Kane is lonely.
He needs a friend. Another English speaker, primarily English speaker on the team.
Yeah, they just, you know, one of, I mean, teammates also at Spurs. Like, he's lonely, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I think that's honestly the only explanation I can think of.
We've known Thomas Tuchel's not the greatest talent ID guy. If he had a say in this, it's a bummer for us because we thought we were going to cash in on Chalobah, who's been MIA for a whole season now. So, yeah. Bummer for the, what's it called, like pure profit or whatever the terminology is for the books.
But I don't think that rules out a move completely. I mean, it's funny that you said that Thomas Tuchel is not the best at identifying talent, and he was all over Chalobah. So what does that say about Chalobah as a player? But yeah, I mean, I still think, I think at this point, like the relationship between the club and the player is probably at a very, very low spot. So it's very hard for me to envision him making his way back to the team at any point. So, you know, I mean, just like as a service to him, like, let's find something like a loan move at least, like if the price that we're looking for isn't there. Like, do you remember what was the number that Bayern
somewhere would, like, 20 something? Somewhere the 20 something million, and I don't think we would have like raised the price for it being in January, you know? Like, I think it was Bayern was like just running out of time in the summer window, and that's why the deal just never got done. Same reason why they didn't get Paulinho. Like, they just ran out of time. So I don't think we were going to make it more expensive. I think it would have gone for something like 25 mil. But
yeah. And like, I haven't heard anything. I haven't seen anything about other teams that are interested. I don't know how, if you have, but hopefully there's something else out there for him, because, you know, his time at Chelsea was, you know, he had some really great moments, and I think he's a really good guy too. I don't know, I've met him before, but from what I've seen, he's a good guy. So hopefully things work out for both parties. Next bit of transfer news. So the Andre Santos loan project was a complete failure. Did he even see the pitch? Like, did he even get
10 minutes, something like that? It was, it was awful.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think even at the time of the loan deal, like, we thought that it was kind of a weird spot. But I don't know. Right now, it's still. So he's been recalled. I don't know if I've mentioned that, but as of right now, it's to be determined. I think it's pretty much guaranteed that he's going to get loaned out again. I think it's pretty clear. I think what their focus is trying to find the best option. Like, I saw Crystal Palace as a potential spot, which I think kind of makes sense because their midfield is not strong at all. And they are inching pretty close to that relegation spot. But I don't know. You think that there's a chance that he stays? Like, I mean, if he stays, like, how much does he play?
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, how bad is Leslie Ugochukwu's injury? How bad is Lavia's injury? Is Connor Gallagher going to stay? Like, there's no clear updates on the contract negotiations. Everything says that if a large enough bid comes, we're going to get our heads turned. Like, I don't know. I think Andre Santos has just kind of been fucked for the season. I don't think there's a winning solution here. You talked about Palace. I don't know if Roy Hodgson is going to be the manager by the end of the season. So I fear him going to Crystal Palace under Roy Hodgson, thinking, yeah, he's going to be a piece of the puzzle. New manager comes in, and he's going to rely on the guys that are actually contracted by Palace. Same thing sort of that happens at Forest, right? Forest had a plan, and then they ended up buying four more center mids or something like that. It's just, it's tough. I think that there's also that whole thing where he might go to, like, Brazil for, like, the Olympics or some sort of international thing that would be happening during the season. So I don't think it's super clear cut with him, at least, that he's just going to go right back on loan. I really don't.
Yeah, the Connor Gallagher thing, like, it'll be really tough, I think, for me to accept the fact if we sold him. I think obviously the team that's been rumored is Spurs.
Yeah,
I would hate that to see him go to Tottenham.
Everything says that he wants to stay and fight for his place. At the end of the day, I think that's the most realistic outcome. It just feels like,
I don't know. I mean, fighting for his space, like he's
going to do everything.
Place is locked in.
Yeah, but Poch has been very clear about it. I guess I'm just saying, like, how many, like, Connor doesn't want to sign an 8-year contract is what the rumors are. That's what the club is offering. Like, how many more summers till he finally is like, these guys just don't want me here. Like, the fans want me here, my teammates want me here, but the decision makers don't. Like, I don't think January is the right time by any means, and I don't want to see us sell Connor Gallagher, period, because I think he's proved his worth to this team. I think that come summer, he's going to be sold. I don't think it'll happen in January, though. Like, I think that would be very stupid on the club's part.
Yeah, here's two things. One, I don't know if offering him an 8-year deal is a sign that they don't want him, right? I mean, like, an 8-year long-term contract, like, is that not the club saying we want you here long-term? I mean, I guess
it's like, yeah, you lock in his value a bit more. Like, sign this contract, and then we can sell you for $50 million, not this summer, but next summer, and the summer after that. Like, his performance goes down, and he's not being promised, like, a big pay raise either. Like, but they're not giving him an extension with the marquee money that says you are a starter for today and tomorrow.
Yeah, but I think if the club were, like, look at what happened with Osimhen this summer, right? Or this past month. He's a guy that, you know, it's everyone knows that he's probably out next summer, and the club are very willing to listen to offers for him. And, you know, when they redid his contract, they didn't offer him a 6-year deal. It's a 1-year extension. And I think that if the club were under the impression that, or they were operating with the impression that we want to move on from him in the summer, not necessarily that they want to, but, like, that's, like, their ideal situation, then they would probably offer him, like, a 1-2-year extension. Like, I think that the 8-year contract is kind of a little bit, I might be wrong, but I just think that if they wanted to retain his value, like, you could still do that with a 1 or 2 year contract. You don't need 8 years to retain that value. So, I mean, but locking him in an 8-year deal is beneficial to the club because we get to keep his salaries low. And that's kind of the only way that happens, is if he stays for, obviously it doesn't have to be the full 8 years, but, you know, however long it is longer than 1 year. So, I don't know, that's the way I think of it. And then the other thing is, if you look at just the way that Tottenham and Daniel Levy do business, like, this guy is he's such an ass. Like, I hate Daniel Levy so much. Like, he is so proud of doing, like smart business, he thinks. You know, like, he's the kind of guy who's like, oh, look how much we got Brennan Johnson, and look how much we got fucking James Maddison for. Like, you know, like, these are the types of deals that they like doing.
Yeah,
I feel like them buying Connor Gallagher for $60 million, which I think is, like, the number that we would agree to, I don't see them doing that. Like, that's just not the type of business that Daniel Levy does, and that cheap team. So I personally don't see it happening. And I don't know if it happens over the summer. I would love to keep him. He's definitely been our best player this season. I mean, he came on, like, he created, like, 3 or 4 chances in his very limited performance. Like, he played, like, what? Like, 30 minutes?
He played, like, 25 minutes.
Yeah, and I think he created, like, 3 or 4 chances.
I was going to say, when he came really on, he was, like, saucy. It was, like, a different Connor Gallagher. Like, it wasn't his typical, like, just hard nose.
Cardio like, merchant.
like he wasn't just working hard and doing the easy things. He was like back heel here, spin move here. Like he had a little bit of like a like some flair to him in this match. It was interesting. Yeah. Again, I am not saying that you sell Conor Gallagher. I guess like my
negative, I didn't get that from what you said, by the way.
Yeah, I just have this like. The pessimist in me thinks that the directors and the owners have not yet committed to Pochettino past this season. So I think they're also afraid of committing past this season with Gallagher because it feels like Gallagher is Poch's guy, but he is not the directors and the owners guy. Like their plan, like this... We keep hearing about this like 4-window plan and what they wanted to do upon buying. Like Gallagher was always going to be a piece that got the money for their next guy. And Gallagher has done so well for himself to stay here and earn his spot here. I just think that if Poch continues to get the results like we've seen at the back end of December and, you know, we're now in the semifinals, we're in the next round of the FA Cup and we move up the table. And it's like, okay, Poch has got it figured out. Poch is here for next season. That's when I think you'll see the club and Conor Gallagher in advanced talks for a renegotiation or an extension. Like, until that happens, I don't think the narrative changes for Conor Gallagher. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think the most interesting part about what you said is that there's a pessimistic side to you. I honestly had never seen it before. You are typically the king of blind optimism and just like ignorance, I would say also in a good way. Ignorance is bliss type. I never heard you be pessimistic about this team before. So that's good to know. I'd love to see that side of you more, Andreas. But yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I just think the moral of the story is I don't see it happening. Yeah. I think you're right about the whole club not being 100% behind Poch, like moving forward, like not necessarily thinking, oh, they want to get rid of him, but like,
yeah,
not being sold yet. And I'm kind of with them too. Like, you know, he hasn't done anything that's like, this man deserves to stay another year or however many years. Like, but yeah,
as awful as it sounds, he hasn't had the big Ange effect, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
he hasn't revolutionized how you're supposed to look at your club the way some other managers have for their respective clubs.
Yep, he just needs to say mate like 500 more times per sentence, and he'll be just like big Ange. All right, so that was Andre Santos. I think the last bit of transfer news. David Dotro Fofana recalled from Berlin. From what I've seen, he hasn't been playing much. We're looking to move him again to Sevilla. They're in advanced talks. I think it's a loan, but the way that Fabrizio worded it made it seem like we were going to sell him, which doesn't make sense. I mean, we just bought him like, I think like literally exactly a year ago to this day. So it would be weird to sell him already, but yeah, I don't know if anything more needs to be said on this.
They're also stuff. In relegation form Sevilla,
which is crazy. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. I think like, so apparently Dotro Fofana, two things, right? The loan to Berlin, I think trying to go into it, Berlin suffered what Newcastle is now facing, like just going from mid table, like to the feel good story that makes Champions League. That's a big jump. And I think we saw it a few years back with Leicester City when they went to Champions League, and then look at Leicester City now. Like, I think having Champions League added to your schedule is such an under I don't know how to say it. Like, not underrated, but I think people think it's so easy just because you qualify to get to it. But in reality, it's such a taxing thing to a squad that may not have the depth or may not have the experience to kind of, like, you've never been there before. So you add that to Union Berlin. You add that to a 19, 20-year-old who played in freaking Malmo or wherever the hell in Sweden before coming to Chelsea, when Chelsea was trash, played a few games for Chelsea. He wasn't lighting it up for Chelsea either. And then you go now to a top four Bundesliga team trying to compete in Champions League. He throws a fit when the manager subbed him out early. So then that manager completely ousted him for weeks. That manager gets fired. New manager hasn't really steadied the ship while using him. So, yeah.
Union Berlin are also in the relegation.
Yeah, right now. It's been awful, and he's not going to get any minutes anymore. So Sevilla being super interested sounds good. Hopefully that's an easier place for him to thrive. If they're at a point where they're, you know, it sounds like, based on what you said about Fabrizio, if we're going to loan him with a buyback clause or sell him with a buyback clause, that's fine. I don't think Fofana comes back in this summer and suddenly he's part of this striking core. Like,
yeah,
Nico Jackson is for sure got a future here. We're looking to buy a striker. Whether we somehow convince Osimhen or we go elsewhere, that's two of the three positions. And we're not going to sell Broja in January. So there's a lot of moving pieces that would have to move for Fofana to even have a spot in the first team squad. So again, if we sell him, I'm not going to, like, I bet you we sell him for profit. Like, if we get a couple million more than what we paid for, I don't see why we wouldn't do it. Like, he's got potential. Just add like a buyback clause or add a first refusal clause. Like, we don't have to be the club that always has to develop the talent, if that makes sense. Like, we don't have the luxury to put in a 20-year-old with no experience, drop him in for a few games here. Like, we're doing that with so many positions that only, like, the cream of the crop of those young guys can handle that sort of pressure. So I'm okay with selling him and then just having first refusal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was hoping we'd spend no less than 30 seconds talking about him. So that's how much how much intrigue I have in retaining him, to be honest. So I don't care. Moving on. Preview of Carabao Cup semifinals, first leg against Borough. Right now, they're sitting 12th in the championship with two wins out of their last five. Earlier today, they had a close matchup against Villa, with Villa nearly, you know, cranking out a 1-0 win late with a late goal. So, you know, I guess, you know, Michael Carrick also as manager, interesting. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm going into this match with a lot of confidence. Like, obviously, we lucked out on the draw. Like, it was between them, Liverpool, and Fulham, and we definitely got the best option out of the three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the chance, I don't even know if we've recorded or since the draw, or we, I mean, after the draw, like,
no, we talked
about this. I mean, obviously, we've recorded since the draw, but we didn't talk about the draw. But yeah, I mean, I think our chances of making it to the final are very high, obviously. Like, I think, like, if it were like a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago, I would be really worried still about moving on. But I think the way that we've been performing, Poch kind of figuring out, like, what type of team that he wants to play, like, I'm starting to see the identity. And, you know, players returning from injury, which is nice. Like, we haven't mentioned, but Ben Chilwell and
Chukwuemeka
also both returning to practice. Like,
can't wait.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see them back. Hopefully they don't get rushed back, but, you know, it's nice to see them back. So, yeah, I mean, do you agree with my sentiment?
No, I feel good about it. I mean, you talk about their position in the table. They're only a point ahead of Preston North End, the team that we just battered 4-0. And I don't think we're going to play, like, we played a pretty decent side. If anything, we're going to play a stronger 11 than what we played for this match, right? Like, our defense won't have, as much as Alfie Gilchrist played well at right back, like, he most likely won't start there. And you would think that maybe Thiago Silva gets back into the starting 11 after not having to play 90 minutes. Little things like that to sort of prevent the first 45 minutes from happening again.
And you know what I'm thinking too? I mean, earlier you mentioned, well, why did Sterling play the full 90 yesterday? We're starting a stronger 11 without him in it, right?
Is that No. I don't know, dude.
At this point, I don't know.
Dude, I agree with you. It's been weird. I would think that Sterling starts still. It'll be, again, freaking, who knows, man? All I can tell you is this. Cole will be at left back. Gusto will be at right back. Thiago Silva most likely at center back. Caicedo will start. Broja will start because we don't have any other options. The rest, it's a toss-up. I don't even know if Enzo starts. Like, Enzo played the full 90, right? Or did he come off? I can't remember at this point.
I think he came off.
He came off. Okay. So
actually, no, he scored in like the 80 something minute.
So yeah. He came off for that kid. We gave a debut to the Michael Golding kid. Like, he had like 5 minutes of play time.
Yeah. I just love to dap up the ref on the sideline before coming in.
Yeah. Kid thought the ref was high fiving him when he was signaling to make
us. I think the first time looked like he was trying to dap him up though. And then the second, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen a ref do that, honestly. Do that?
Kid was nervous. Good for him.
Got the start. I don't blame him. I think if I were in this situation, I'd do the same exact thing.
but in terms of Burrow, like, I feel good about the matchup. I hope we handle business in the first leg to where the second leg isn't going to be a nervy one. And then you talked about having the best possible outcome. Fulham plays a Mo Salah-less Liverpool next round. A Liverpool that had to really fight this weekend against Arsenal. Like, can we get a little bit of cup magic in that semifinal tie so that, you know, something crazy, the luck continues, and then if our new identity is having luck, I'll fucking take it.
Yeah, I mean, it was two seasons ago, really not too long ago, that we made it into the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup final, and we lost both to Liverpool. So yeah. Those are our two last cup finals.
Both times in penalties.
And both matches ended 0-0 as well. No one scored a goal in either game. So I would not like to see... Well, part of me would not like to see Liverpool again. Part of me...
Or is that like revenge. Third time's the charm?
Yeah. I mean, maybe third time's the charm for them. I don't know. But they'll actually score a goal. One of us will score a goal in regular time. But I don't know. So we kind of talked about our lineup predictions, whatever. Score prediction.
Two nil us.
I think we put three past them, and I'm gonna predict Broja gets a brace. I say Broja gets two.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'd be great for his confidence. We need that for multiple reasons. Do you think? Do you think there's a possibility that we see an Andre Santos on the bench?
I say no. No chance. I think he's gone. That's
who takes Ian Motson's place on the bench? How about that? Because he was on the bench, I believe, this weekend. He was on the bench. And we already put two goalkeepers. We already infamously always have two goalkeepers on the bench. So,
well, we'll see. I mean, Kunku might come back. We'll see.
Yeah.
So if it's him, you know, if he comes back, then it's him. But if Andre Santos, then there's two spots on the bench because Andre Santos would have to lose a spot. I didn't even realize that he was on the bench. So I take it back. Maybe he is on the bench, but I doubt he plays. I don't know. You might have convinced me otherwise. Are we
who knows? I don't know. I like the kid. I like the kid. It'd be, I'd love to see like a wild story where he suddenly like is getting a bunch of minutes, but that's an, that's
yeah, really imagine good. Imagine he gets on and scores a goal and like just looks great, and then let's start writing some Chelsea fanfic as a side hustle. We'll start a premium podcast like membership, and it's just going to be Chelsea fanfiction.
Hey, yeah, listen,
tell us if you guys are interested.
It wasn't too long ago. It probably is to this day, January 8th ish, 2021, when I talked about the possibility of us winning the Champions League when Thomas Tuchel was about to take over. He hadn't even coached a game. I'm not saying...
Your next prediction is that Andre Santos.
No. Right, we got to come up with something juicier than that.
We got to find some time that this has happened in Chelsea's history, something similar, and find all the parallels between then and now. Then we'll start. Then we'll be cooking for sure.
Listen, I haven't put my tinfoil hat on, but it's this time of year that gets it for me. So we'll see what I cook up between now and post Burrow.
All right, let him cook. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. We apologize for not putting out a questions tweet. We didn't have any questions this time after the match, but I think we probably discussed everything that would have been asked anyway. And then if you don't already, follow us on Twitter, or formerly Twitter, now X, social media platform, at Blues on Parade. And until then, until next episode, keep the blue flag flying high.